All right, here we go. Welcome back to another episode of That's
So Cincinnati.
Phil Didion on the ones and twos, executive producer and engineer. He's the man.
Good job last week.
I've got to set you up here, Sherry.
All right, start again, Phil.
No, we're not starting again. I'm just like, Sherry.
We have to now. We're
whole again. We are whole again. Sherry is back from Hawaii, as my kid calls it, otherwise known as Hawaii.
It was amazing.
Great to have you back. You're looking great. You look like you have some energy, and you're ready for the stretch run of 2019 all the way into 2020, because it is now time to lock in. We are in full 2020 political mode, and our guest today is Ohio Democratic Party Chairman, former Hamilton County Commissioner, former Cincinnati City Councilman, David Pepper. We're looking forward to having him in today, and we're going to spend most of this episode chatting with him about Trump and what's going on in Ohio and 2020, and some of his book writing. And so we're going to kind of jump to that here quickly. Sherry, you were starting to say something, and I cut you off.
It was a good episode last week. It's fun. I missed you guys, obviously, but it's good to listen to it and like kind of get the feeling for it. And it was a good conversation.
Thanks again. Last week, if you didn't check it out, great listenership. But if you haven't listened, go back. We had the first family of fireworks, brother and sister Joe and Nancy Rossi on to talk fireworks and the unique history of their four-generation family business. Also had our Hamilton County reporter in the first segment, and our local regional political reporter Scott Wortman on to talk about the banks and all that's going on there. And then I wrote a column about that over the weekend.
Yes, you did. What kind of reaction did you get to that? Jason called for a pause on the project. He went there.
Yeah, I called for a pause, and the reaction was very positive. I got an inbox full of regular readers saying, we agree. I got a text messages full of influencers saying, yes, we agree. And, you know, so Sherry, follow Sherry. Follow Scott Wortman, at Scott Wortman on Twitter, at Sharon Coolidge on Twitter. From the city perspective, from the county perspective, they're going to be all over this. I'm going to continue to keep tabs from the commentary perspective.
I mean, something you said in your column, very true. This is a critical moment in the riverfront development, and I think it's fine. It's really starting to be treated like that. We're not just talking about a music venue anymore, and we're just talking about all of these different domino effects and these wide-ranging things. This is going to dominate, I think, the news cycle for the next couple of weeks while all these decisions are being made.
Totally agree, and we don't want to belabor too much because we wanted to really focus kind of out of the gate here, out of Labor Day, on really 2020 politics. But certainly we'll be talking about that more here. There's going to be tons of coverage on Cincinnati.com and in the Inquirer. So follow what we're doing. No one's doing this, folks, the way we're doing it, in the in-depth, the commentary, the in-depth reporting, the way we're doing it on all these issues. And certainly right now a hot topic is what's going on at the banks and everything surrounding that. Let's jump to David Pepper and bring him in, and let's chat with him. Okay, welcome into our guest segment here on the TSC. We're just adding a little Pepper today.
All right.
A little blast from the past. Just add Pepper, Ohio Democratic Party Chairman David Pepper, and a Cincinnatian. And David, thanks for stopping in.
It's good to be. You know, there are still thousands of Just Add Pepper bags in Hamilton County headquarters, and they come out every November and are used still. So we overordered apparently in 2006.
I feel like that's the most famous campaign slogan to come out of here. That plus along with like AFTAB's puppet,
the duck,
the duck.
I mean, on election day,
those are the memorable things.
On election day in 2001, literally everyone would say my slogan back to me, and they would pour a pepper shaker, and that's when I knew I was doing well.
That was your 2000. That was
the
for
first
commissioner.
Campaign, yeah,
for commissioner.
No, that was city council. Oh, that was council, my first council campaign.
And then you used it again in commissioner.
It did well for a few campaigns.
Anyway, you're just adding pepper to other things right now. Right. Well, that was a bad segue.
I know, but I felt you had to do it.
We are in full 2020 mode, David Pepper. And hot off the presses, just over the weekend here, the Ohio Democratic Party sent a release saying that the next round of Democratic presidential debates are going to be in Ohio. Talk about that and how, you know, why that's important.
Yeah, no, we are very excited about that. I think the next round is in Houston for October, September. Right. And then we're the next announcer.
Yep.
October. It'll be October 15th, which is a Tuesday. Wednesday if necessary. So the people you'll see debating in Houston will all be at the Ohio debate, but the window is still open for other people. So, you know, Tom Steyer or Tulsi Gabbard or a few others are kind of close. It's not clear if they'll make it or not, but they still have a chance. If they got on, my guess is it's not up to me that it would end up being 2 days because 11 or 12 on the stage, 10's already too many. Mm-hmm. 11 or 12 would clearly. So we're very excited. And I'll just say, we were talking about this as we got going. It's obviously very important for us that Ohio not just be seen as, but be a very contested state. Mm-hmm. And we've been making the case that if you start looking closely at the underlying results last November, we won races we wanted to win. We lost some we wanted to win. But when you look at the fundamentals of what happened last November, the data is very clear that Ohio is very much in play. When you start seeing communities like Blue Ash, Ohio, go from years ago, the 30s and 40s for Democrats, Sherrod and Cordray actually winning them last November. When you see suburban counties like Delaware County,
yep,
that used to be low 30s, they're now in their mid 40s for Democrats. In many ways, the heart of the Republican base is moving away from them. Once you make that shift, it gets much harder for Republicans to win the state. Now, they can win. Obviously, they did. But they can also lose like they did Supreme Court races they expected to win. You also are starting to see state house seats that were designed for Republicans, gerrymandered for Republicans. We hadn't flipped a single state house seat the entire decade. We flipped six last November. Where? Those same suburbs. So we've been making the case in Ohio and beyond. Don't look past Ohio. There's a real battle brewing here because the Republican Party has lost the core of what used to be its base. And so we've been making that case. And obviously, to have the debate here, to have the DNC agree with us, to have other major groups see us that way really does, A, affirm what we're saying.
Yeah.
But B, it gives us a chance in October to have the debate come here and have Democrats and Republicans and independents across the state in October see these candidates close up, assess them. And it gives us, again, with the whole national media in Ohio, it gives us as a party, again, a chance to make the case. Looking past Ohio, whether it's Democrats or the pundits on the coast, is a huge mistake because we're right in the mix of things.
And you know, honestly, you and I have discussed that, and you've helped to really convince me of that Ohio still very much is in play. And then when you guys turn around and announce that you're having the debates here in October, that's a big statement in that argument that you've been making.
You know who also is clearly sees it that way? Donald Trump. He's here all the time.
Absolutely.
You wouldn't see Donald Trump and Mike Pence and Betsy DeVos. They're here almost on a weekly basis, all around the state, you know, everywhere from Canton to down here to Lima, because they are seeing the same numbers that now the public is seeing through some of these polls. He's underwater here. He doesn't win here. The election's over, and he knows that. So he keeps coming back as well, more than he's going to other states that are often more talked about.
But the Republican Party today announced that Kellyanne Conway is going to head their state dinner. You had Nancy Pelosi.
Yeah,
How do you think Kellyanne stacks up to that?
First of all, I'm worried that she'll violate the Hatch Act, which she does on a near daily basis. So I'm worried for her legal liability there. But secondly, I'll take all of our candidates coming here for a debate and potentially our state dinner over Kellyanne Conway. I'll just say it that way. But again, you know, the Trump campaign at the very high end clearly understands that they've got problems in Ohio. That's why they keep coming here. They're not going to the states where they're up by 10. They're coming to Ohio where they're down by, depending on the poll, you know, 5, 6, 10 points. And so they know, and I think Jane Timken knows, the chair of the Republican Party, that, you know, when you lose, you know, I ran for county commission and won. I don't remember the exact number, but I was someone who got a lot of crossover votes. That's why I was able to win when it was harder to win. Mm-hmm. I probably got low 40s in Blue Ash. That was considered good. So when you, and these are big, that's, these are bigger play. Blue Ash in the grand scheme of this state is a big city, okay? A lot of counties are about the same size. To have a city flip from low 40s when I ran being a good result to both Cordray and Sherrod and others getting low 50s, that's a big change. And people talk a lot, we'll talk about it. Well, there's some Democrats in Youngstown who are going for Trump, and that happens some. The suburbs moving to the left is a much bigger chunk of people than the people that are that may have used to vote Democrat that voted for Trump. The size of the population going the other way, and it's largely women, is far more. And by the way, that's one reason why for us it's very important we're running women in these suburbs. That's why I think both Kate and Nikki Foster are very good candidates against Shabbat. Some of the best state house candidates that are already running are women in these suburbs. That's who's shifting, and you want to have candidates and messages that appeal to folks who used to vote Republican, maybe have been independent for a decade, but now seem to be voting Democrat.
I'm going to stick with you, and again, this is something you've been really, really focused on so much, is the suburban voter, and Blue Ash is a great example of suburban Cincinnati here. When you look at the 2016 election, even the 2018 election, when it's just the rural vote versus the urban vote, the rural vote is typically always going to trump, with no pun intended, the urban vote. And so it makes the suburbs really the swing areas. Can you talk about, let's just take Blue Ash, for example. What does that mean? When you talk about how that's such a targeted area, if I were a voter living in Blue Ash, what does that mean to me in terms of the 2020 election? Am I going to just be bombarded by Facebook ads? Am I going to be, are people going to be knocking on my door every night? Can you sort of more on the,
sure,
on the grassroots, or, you know, on the layman's term level, what does that mean?
Yeah, and let me just say, we are, as a party, focused on every piece of Ohio.
Absolutely.
I'm talking about this shift that's taking place, but we're all about campaigning rural Ohio. In a few days, I'll be at a fair in Northwest Ohio. We have a whole rural action team we're putting together, because we also have to engage there. You know, I'll get to your question in a second, yeah, but I mean, Obama lost the small 50 counties of Ohio 60-40. Doesn't sound good, but actually very good.
Yep.
His numbers in Cuyahoga alone overcame that loss. Hillary lost those same 50 counties, 73-27, election, yep, over. So we've got to compete in rural Ohio, holding our losses down to about what Obama did. We've got to really fire up our cities and get the turnout up. But as you said, and both of those are relatively stable, although you can see that if you campaign there under the right message in rural Ohio, you can get to 60-40 instead of 75-25, yeah, and that is a game changer. Sherrod got a lot closer to the Obama number, yeah, than he did to the Hillary number. That mattered. But the shift in the suburbs is the big game changer, we think, in terms of the overall state. I mean, this is literally was the base of the Republican Party in Ohio. The rural, mm-hmm, parts were not. The suburbia, you know, the townships around here, you know, Warren County, this was where the numbers, the highest raw vote totals come from. The biggest margin of victory by raw vote was Warren County, and second was Delaware County. They're still running up numbers there, but if that margin is reduced, yep. So to answer your question, it's a lot of women voters who I think have become less and less comfortable with the president's rhetoric, less and less comfortable with the extreme legislating we're seeing out of Columbus or Congress, you know, nothing on trying to do something about gun violence. A level of extremism when it comes to the whole, you know, choice battle and reproductive health, where they're passing laws that a few years ago, you know, Ken Blackwell was viewed as an extremist because he didn't support exceptions for rape or incest. Now that's the laws they're passing. All of that stuff is really, I think, hurting them. And what's strange is if you look at last November's results, and you see how much ground they lost in suburbs where Jessica Miranda won. We won 3 seats in Franklin County that were Republican areas 5 years ago. We won them each by double digits. You would think they would have gone back to Columbus and thought, oh, geez, we're really turning off these former Republican voters, particularly women. We better change what we're doing. Nope, they went right back. And unlike John Kasich, who vetoed some of this stuff, DeWine's signing it all. So they're literally doubling down on the worst of it. So our goal will be to run candidates, you know, whether it's Kathy Wynan, who just announced against, I'm forgetting her name now, but the woman, Candace Keller, who tweeted that horribly viral, you know, that terrible thing she said about the Dayton shooting. You want to know why they're losing votes in suburbs? It's because people like Candace Keller, after the Dayton shooting, are posting and sending stuff out like that. So we have people who fit into these districts, a lot of women running, like Nikki Foster or Kate Schroeder or you know, I'll remember other names, but people all over the state running. And so for the most part, the first thing I'll see is really good candidates that feel a lot more in touch with their own values and worldview than the very far right we're seeing and then Donald Trump. And then, of course, on the grassroots level, you'll see, you know, some of the most fired up progressive energy in Ohio is actually in the suburbs. You know, all these new Indivisible groups and Women's March groups and others, they're all over, but they're really strong in suburbs. And it's people who weren't involved before Trump won. Some of them, and if they were involved, some were Bernie people, some were Hillary people. After Trump won, they said, we don't care what side we were on. We are now in groups called Indivisible and other groups like that. And they're hitting the pavement as much as the party and candidates. You know, Danny O'Connor's campaign, which got a lot of attention in Columbus last year, the Indivisible group up there, it's literally called Indivisible 12, district. They are a force like none I've ever seen. And so I think a lot of these suburbs will see their own neighbors self-organizing in addition to party efforts. By the way, one other thing, you will see a lot that the new technology in Donald Trump, this is what he did so well in 16. Yep. The targeted digital world is very strong for not a lot of money. People are getting very targeted ads right at swing voters. And we're trying to counter that, although we don't have the money the Trump campaign does. But I think a lot of those voters will see, in addition to a door knock.
Suburban mother. Yeah. And I have to say, like this time, Trump is in my feed constantly.
Yeah.
And compared to last time, I'm not sure I even saw it. Like, I definitely don't remember, but it has resonated. I see it all the time. He's coming, all these things. And like,
this goes back to Jason's question about Trump. He is spending here more money than in all but three other states. We're the fourth highest spending because, again, he's in trouble here. Our role, we believe, as a party, is a moment that's scaring Democrats. Trump is all over targeted online media. He's targeting people who voted for, let's say, him and Sherrod Brown. He's going after these swing voters. He knows that they're up for grabs. And we have a choice as a party, and this is true of all the state parties, and I was just at a DNC meeting talking about this. If we sit here and do nothing, our primary candidates are not talking to these voters. They're talking to the most core Democrats who will show up in a primary. So if we don't make a pushback while our candidates are fighting out primary, Trump will have these voters all to himself for the next 9 months or a year. So one thing we at the ODP are doing is we are spending, not nearly what he is, but time and resources communicating. If you're in rural Ohio right now or in the past several months, you've gotten some communications from us about soybeans and what's happening to farms
thanks
to the crazy trade war. If you're in a blue-collar area, you're hearing from us about Lordstown and the GM jobs going away and Trump saying it doesn't matter. So we are doing everything we can to battle him out at this very important level. And you know, the amount of views you get versus television buying per dollar is incredible. And so one worry I have is that there's this mismatch right now where Trump is blitzing states like ours online, and our candidates they're not in general election mode yet, so they're not responding. Well, we're trying the best we can to do that.
But the big thing, I think Ohio is a key state in that, you know, there's obviously we saw what happened in 2016 and 2018. It's Ohio, let's face it, is Trump country until otherwise proven. But if you can make him spend a lot of money here, talk about that and how if you can basically make it an even race here and make him spend millions and millions and millions of dollars here that are not going to Pennsylvania or to Wisconsin, how big of a deal is that?
It's a big deal. And just to give the trajectory, so I became chair a few weeks after 14, where every Democrat lost by 30. Then Democrats in 16, although disappointing that we lost, you know, the loss was by 8 or less versus 30. 2018 was our closest midterm since 2006. So you're seeing the move. People keep saying, hey, after November last year, we were more red than ever. Actually, we were less red than we've been since 06 and 08 because of that suburban shift. So people are, you know, and obviously Sherrod won. We won Supreme Court races. So we're closer than we've been. And that does really matter because, you know, I've as you'd expect, I've gotten to know the chairs of Michigan and Wisconsin and other states. Of course, we have to win Wisconsin and Michigan first and Pennsylvania. From my view, we never should have lost them in the first place. Ohio's always going to be tough back and forth.
Absolutely.
Sometimes we win, sometimes we lose. If we lose Wisconsin, Michigan, in the presidential, it's over. We know that. So if we can battle it out in Ohio, if Trump is forced to come here and have his rallies here because he knows he's down, which he is, and he has to spend money online here again. He's spending more here online than he is in Michigan and Wisconsin. He's in trouble here. He knows it. If he loses here, it's over. As I tweeted at my friend, the Wisconsin chair, the other day, we have to win Wisconsin. Ohio is sort of your left tackle. We're blocking.
Yeah.
And if he's
protecting
stuck,
your blind side.
If he's stuck here fighting us here, that's how we make sure. Now, I think we can win here. But if we're here in a ground war until the election day and it's just tied all the way through, we're winning Wisconsin. We're winning Pennsylvania. So in our mind, this is a team sport. The other way I'd put it is, my ED says it, we're a firewall. Now, often in a firewall, the firewall burns down, but all the other walls are intact. So we're ready to go. We're ready to fight all the way through. And if by protecting those other states, our battle matters, then we can win the presidency. You know, we want to be blue, but just by having the fight be here helps us win the presidency.
I know this is a question Sherry wants to ask, but let's go back to those debates. Can you break some news and tell us where in Ohio those presidential debates are going to be?
If I could, I would do it on your podcast.
But
it's
like,
it's not your call.
It's not my. This is a way above my pay grade.
If it was going to be here, I feel like Jason would already know. So I'm discounting that it's going to be here. But I'm just looking in the crystal ball that's at our desks.
I can't comment. I would break it here if I could, and I was. I thought the timing may be better than it was, but the presidential candidates were all informed on Saturday that it was coming to Ohio, and a few of them tweeted out. So we put that statement out to make sure it was not just some tweet, but I wish I could tell you.
I know Sherry's got a bunch of questions. There's one other thing I want to mention on the suburban. It's interesting. I sat down with your counterpart, the Ohio Republican chairwoman, Jane Temkin, who also is from Cincinnati, earlier this summer. And all she wanted to talk about was targeting suburban, or not everything, but she really wanted to deliver the message that suburban voters are so key. So if you live in Blue Ash or Sharonville or Mason, right here in Greater Cincinnati, get ready because you are going to be bombarded from both sides.
Yeah, I tweeted out about a week ago. There was a new group of Mason Democrats that just started. They're fired up. They had a ton of people at their first meeting. You go to Warren County Democratic events. When I campaigned in 2010, and this is no offense to the old leadership, I showed up at Warren County dinner. It's like 30 people. You go now, it's hundreds of people. People are fired up, and it's both the party and it's all these other groups. I think one reason we had the highest midterm turnout basically we've ever seen on the Democratic side last year was because of this extra layer
of
indivisible groups and others that were also out there plugging away.
But also, I think, you know, you and I have also talked about that as the AFTAB effect. Oh, yeah. You can... even though he lost his congressional race against Shabbat last year, I think he really energized a new kind of wave of Democrats in areas where we've been typically seeing it's just all Republicans all the time.
Yeah.
But I think Warren County is a good example where you saw more turnout at events there, and I think AFTAB was really energizing the resources coming around him.
So I've been doing several of the swearings in of the new folks, and it's always AFTAB who's being asked, and I always think it's appropriate because because of his campaign, turnout was lifted in a way that actually got a lot of other people across the line in the victory column. So AFTAB, he obviously there were some bumps late, but his field team and he knew that they were shouldering the get out the vote effort for everybody. And I went to a few meetings with him and his team, and I can't admire them more for they kept fighting because they felt a burden that hey, you know, Pierre Bergeron or others are relying on our effort to make sure Democrats come out. And they really thought it through it that way. And they were very down because of the loss, his team was. And I would go and say, thank you. You are the reason why Hamilton County had one of its best blue years we've ever seen.
There are some two possible candidates coming who could be important to that.
Right.
Eric Kearney, you know, a lot of people are pushing him to run for mayor, and he has not said whether he's going to do that, but he has not said no. I encourage people to read a Q&A with Kevin Aldridge that we ran over the weekend. There's a wide-ranging conversation, a lot of things
really
there.
Good.
It was a good read.
Good.
But, you know, he didn't discount it. And then, of course, Fanon Rucker is stepping down from municipal court judge, a stunning move. Where he's so popular there, and he hasn't said what he wants to do next. But a lot of people are like, well, is he going to run for something? And so how do things like that, these two people seem like they could be important?
I think they, you know, both of them are friends, and I think both have been great public servants. So we were saying before, I think people don't understand what a leadership role Eric played in the Ohio Senate. I mean, here he is in the super minority, but he was a very respected leader up in Columbus when he was there. And he's very respected.
On both sides.
I mean, normally if you're out number 2-1, I mean, look at Washington, the Senate's in the minority, Democrats can't get anything done. Eric was very respected, got a lot done, had very good relationships. So to me, he's a very impressive leader. And I you know, I'm not going to get into the mayor's race, but I hope his time in public service is not over. I think he's very talented.
There'll be plenty of time for us to press you on what you think about the mayor's race. We're good. We still have some time.
And I'll say, Fanon is also a good friend. I've seen him campaign. His campaign, I don't know what he's going to run for. He wouldn't tell me, okay? Even if he is, his campaign a few years back as a write-in was one of the most impressive things I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Because normally when you're a write-in, you literally get blown out 90-10. He had people excited. He had people fired up. He's also a very good candidate. And this goes back to what we talked about before about having women running. We need, and we're very intentional about this as a party, we need the candidates who are running, whatever they choose to do, we need the candidates running across our state, especially in a big like 20, to reflect this state's diversity. And we have done that very well. But if you have, you know, several prominent African-American respected leaders, if you have one or several running in the year 2020, not only, you know, that could be in some places like Ohio, like Hamilton County, where there's so much angst about the criminal justice system, that could lead to a greater turnout, let's say, in a prosecutor's race. More excitement than even the presidential race. And so around the state, when we have a diversity of candidates running at all levels, it helps get people excited about that individual race and the change that might bring. And it also gets people excited enough to show up at the other levels. And this is the other reason we make sure as much as we can, we want a candidate in all 99 House districts. We want a candidate in all 16. Right now, even though next year's exciting, we are running candidates all over this state for Mansfield mayor, Newark mayor, you know, city councils, red areas, blue areas. The more people you get running at all levels, it helps change the community. It helps bring leaders like Nan Whaley into office, which you want at critical moments, just good leaders, but it also helps lift excitement to get the vote out. And so, you know, a Fanon Rucker running next year, if he were to do that, would electrify voters as much as, you know, whatever was happening at the top of the ticket.
As you, talking about some of our local folks here, we've talked a lot about, it's been written ad nauseum about the trending of Hamilton County to blue. You're in a unique situation in that you're a Cincinnatian who is in a statewide political leadership role. We don't have many Cincinnatians in those types of roles or through the years. How does the rest of the state, the Northeast Ohio Democratic stronghold, the Northwest Ohio, how do other Democratic pockets across the state view Hamilton County now?
Before you answer that, hold on. In case people can hear, you are just pouring a Diet Coke. And I feel like this is a hallmark of who you are. When you were a commissioner, you always had one. I can remember, like, you know, trying to always get the scoop before the meeting because you'd be buying a Diet Coke from the vending machine. So I see this is still, no, it's okay.
As long as, I hope it didn't sound like anything worse.
No, but if you were, I just wanted, if I felt like people could hear you. And like, that is a hallmark of,
that.
You know, we see you with that.
When
like,
I used to knock on, when I knocked on doors, people asked me if I was like given a commission. Promoting Diet Coke because they said not only are you holding it at your city council meetings, but you always seem to hold it so you can see what it what it says. By the way, my kids are always trying to get me to stop drinking Diet Coke.
They are correct.
And on our way to school, we always come across Diet Coke and Coke trucks driving, and that gets them really like, Diet Coke, there it is, Dana. So my kids are also seeing it.
I haven't drank soda in at least 5 years now.
That's smart. No, Every time I give it up for a while and drink water, I lose weight. Like, it really does make a difference, but it ends up...
I was not judging you.
I know.
I was just reminding people about you. You're known for that, and that's what that was.
So what was the question?
I don't know.
So the question is, knowing that Hamilton County is now different...
That's a great question.
How is it viewed across the state? Now, do the Cleveland Democratic powers that be now sort of look at Southwest Ohio, Hamilton County is like, oh, okay, now we can start to rely on Hamilton County as a place where we can get donors, a place where we can build our farm system.
I think the political leaders would see it that way, like a Sherrod Brown, he would know that, others. But there really is, and this is sort of, I've learned in this, and Sherry, you'd agree, and you'd both agree because you're from different parts of the state, Ohio doesn't know itself very well.
No,
you know,
it doesn't.
Everyone knows their part. So I am often told, oh, it's the Southern Ohio folks that are costing us all these elections. That's where it's red. And I'll say, actually, look close to Cleveland. There are a lot of red counties there. Look near Columbus. There are a lot of red counties there. Look down here. We got a big blue county now in Hamilton County. You know, Athens is blue. Pike County often is blue. And so I think people are quick to say northern is red and southern is blue. It's just not accurate. Our cities are generally blue. And because of the shifting suburbs, Hamilton County is more and more blue. You know, Cordray was the first Democrat. This was surprising. He was the first Democrat to win Hamilton County. That's becoming more and more obvious, but you ask what other people view. In pretty far North Ohio, the Democrat just is assuming that everything south of Columbus is red. And then they're starting to, you know, when I first ran statewide, they'd say to me, wow, you're a Democrat who got onto Cincinnati City Council? That's amazing. And I'd say, well, thanks, but we're mostly Democrats on Cincinnati City Council. Yeah. So there's been this view that it's red
south. It's going to be a
huge
fight next
time
to keep a Republican, on council.
Exactly. So the point is, Ohio's more complicated, you know, and it's shifting some. You know, Franklin County was very red. We're about 10 years behind Franklin County.
Yep.
Franklin County was very red 20 years ago. And they started flipping. And now they're getting close to the margin of victory of Cuyahoga. Franklin County is the big mover. That you can run up huge margins. And we're sort of trailing that by 10 years. But I think we're going more and more blue and won't go back either.
Something that has resonated with Jason and I when we look around the state is the idea that, yes, they are becoming more Democratic there, but their prosecutor remains a Republican.
Correct.
Entrenched, yep. Long time. And why do you feel like that is? And is that going to translate down here to the idea that you might be blue everywhere else, but you're very law and order and you want a Republican prosecutor?
I think people, for a good reason, generally, for both, you know, judges and offices like that generally trail, it looks like, the flipping to blue. And people still on their mind think it's a little bit of a less partisan position, and they want to make sure people have the right experience. So these days, you know, Zach Klein, who's now the city attorney, one of our best future Democrats, he ran as strong a race against Ron O'Brien as you could in a blue year in Franklin County. And when it's blue in Franklin County, it's really blue, and he couldn't win. And I think the minute they start saying, rightfully or wrongfully, you haven't been in the courtroom, you haven't been a prosecutor, as in the courtroom prosecutor, that really troubles voters. They want to see people with experience.
I think that's going to be the premise of
right.
this
but,
coming
but by
race
the way,
with
the
Gabe
candidate
Davis.
Who's already announced against Joe Dieters has real experience. He's been in a New York City prosecutor room, which is as tough as it gets. He's been an AUSA, so he does have years in the trenches being a prosecutor. I think if you have that, it's very important that people know that from the get-go, because I think that more than most other jobs, which, you know, on city council, there are 9 members. You can bring all sorts of different work experience. You can be young and be a fresh voice, and people sometimes like that. Same with county commission. You know, there are a lot. But prosecutor, they want to know that you can do this job day to day. And I think that that's why people hang on more, even if a county's flipping. And I think it's why candidates and parties need to make sure their candidates can walk into a campaign and say, I've done this job. And I think voters are more, you know, and by the way, this is true on judicial races too. You need people who, you know, this is one reason we are very proud of. If you talk to me for 10 minutes, you'll know of our two Supreme Court wins. Melody Stewart and Mike Donnelly were wonderful candidates, but they also had incredible experience. They were rated higher than their opponents. They were endorsed by every paper because of their skills as judges. And I think if you're gonna take these less partisan jobs and bring new people in and knock out incumbents, you need to come with people with the kind of experience where even the neutral parties are saying, like the bar did with Melody Stewart, she's incredibly qualified. She's more qualified than the sitting justice on the court. And she won because of it. So I think that's been a challenge. And by the way, it's hard. Why? Because who's providing all the prosecutor jobs of that county? The incumbent.
Right.
Yep.
So he's hiring mainly Republicans in that job and not giving, you know, the quote unquote experience you need to Democrats who would then use it to run against him. So you'll see for our candidates, the experience has to come from somewhere else because it certainly won't be being a Hamilton County prosecutor.
So I think usually we do this at the beginning, but you know what? We said that we thought you'd be a good guest because after Labor Day, we're kind of kicking off this whole political season, and we definitely are. But usually we kind of start with like a little bit of the person's background.
Oops.
And we went right over that.
Right.
We just,
sorry, I jumped right to it. That was my
fault. That's fine.
Because I think that's where we are politically, though. Like we have a lot of political, I mean, we could talk politics with you all day. Right. We could go into tomorrow, I think. But kind of
I want to do this again tomorrow.
Give us a rundown while you ran for council in what year?
Ancient history.
No.
It still feels recent. Yeah, so I basically, as I said when I would run for council, when I ran for council, I went to school out east, and at one point I was named most likely to be president of the Cincinnati Board of Tourism. Because all I, like you guys would
there
be
would
also.
There would be competition now
right,
for that.
Would, yeah, you, would, like, you guys yeah, would win
but,
this
but
award.
But back then, yes, that's true.
And I won it because all I did was brag about Skyline and the Bengals and the Reds and our actual Skyline. I mean, I was clearly a really annoying Cincinnati guy. So they gave me this award. I wish I'd kept the plaque. So I grew up just passionate about Cincinnati. And when I moved back, I clerked for Nate Jones. And I didn't even know what I was going to do. I'd been gone for a decade.
Well, you flirted with being a reporter, is that right?
Yeah, yeah. I did. I spent summers in college. I got rejected by the Inquirer to be an intern, but I worked for the community press papers, and I did a lot
you
of journalism.
You were the editor of your
I was managing editor of my college paper,
your
yeah.
College paper, yep.
But after law school, I'd spent some years in Russia. I went to law school. I moved back. I clerked for Nate Jones.
What did you do in Russia?
Wait, Russia?
Yeah, I worked in Russia. So in Russia, I was working in St. Petersburg, Russia. I lived in D.C. and went back and forth. I worked for a think tank that was doing tech. This was back when Russia and America got along well in the early, mid-90s, like Clinton, Yeltsin, you know, all those summits. It was actually a more positive time in my job at a very – I was 22, but I was helping a group that was trying to provide technical assistance to the city of St. Petersburg. So I would go back and forth on a regular basis, did it for close to 3 years. Actually, my first job was I was a research assistant to Zbigniew Brzezinski, the former national security advisor. And then from there, I did the Russian. So I was all about international, basically. Mm-hmm. I was an international studies major, a co-major with history. But after law school, and then I went to law school, I thought I'd do international law. After law school, I moved back, clerked for Nate Jones, and this was, I think, for many people, the low point of the city, where so much was moving to Kentucky, and ultimately, while I was clerking, we had riots on our streets. We had a number of very controversial shootings.
Yeah.
That was building tension and building tension.
Yes.
And I would flip on. I wasn't political. I couldn't have named two members of city council. I had done a little bit with the reform mayor system when I was a summer intern at a law firm. But I would watch council meetings, and I thought, this is off the charts, and we're losing. And so the kid who won the award for best, you know, promoter of Cincinnati is thinking, what is happening in the city I've been bragging about my whole life? Like, it's a disaster. And then, of course, we ultimately have the riots. So I decided after the clerkship ended. And interestingly, I helped John Cranley, who I had been in a law firm with one summer. I didn't know him very well, but I thought I'll go help him run for Congress when I finished my clerkship. And he was running for against Shabbat his first time. Yeah, no, this was 2000. This was 2000.
Oh.
And after that, I thought I helped him for a little bit, and I literally thought, well, I can do this. And it was shortly after that, if you look it up, Howard wrote the first story in the fall of 2000, where it said I was looking to run for city council. But when people ask me why did I run, I wasn't, frankly, very partisan. I hadn't been involved. I had to buy a book that said, how do you run a campaign? I remember buying it on Amazon. But what compelled me to do it was I'd been bragging about Cincinnati my whole life, about these artificial, superficial things we all like. And I'm a huge Bengals fan. I always will be, despite many years of them trying to convince me not to be. But after all those problems, I thought, you know, the stuff that really matters right now, we're terrible at. You know, if you ever go back in time and watch the old Vine Street documentary, I mean, a disaster.
No.
And I do place, you know, again, a lot of good people, but the lack of leadership at City Hall for a long time had led us to this place where the entire nation, ultimately world, watched our dysfunction and watched as thousands of people left and our population declined. Businesses went over the river. I literally ran. I didn't have any polling or anything when I first ran for council, but I happened to hit on an ad with the Just Add Pepper slogan at the end that really worked. And I knocked on thousands of doors that first campaign. And so my ad was very simple as a guy who was just making up his own ads. I've knocked on thousands of doors this summer, and I would show myself knocking the door, and people keep asking me the same question. Why is council bickering while everything moves across the river? And I panned over to Newport.
Wait, is he talking about now or before? I forget.
Yeah. I'm talking about 2001.
Sorry.
and I ended up putting together what I didn't mean to. I was just making it up. But I put together the perfect outsider message at a time where people were looking for new people. And so, and then the end of the ad was that pepper shaker. Just Add Pepper for a greater Cincinnati. And between the first 25 seconds and that, 1-2, and as I said, you know, I showed up on election day. I was told the whole time, the first time you run for council, you never win. Don't count. Back then, it was very true. Don't win, but you run a couple times, you'll be fine.
Get your name out there.
And so my goal was to be in the top nine. But on election day, when people are giving your slogan back to you, and your slogan includes the name you want them to find on that sheet of 26 people, you know you're doing well. And obviously, we end up finishing first, which was awesome. But I think I ended up being, you know, I ended up being this perfect outsider candidate without really meaning to or thinking about it, because it felt new, fresh. I was clearly unhappy with the current leadership, and all of a sudden there I was. But it all came out. People asked me, why'd you do it? It's ironic I'm in this job. It was less about party and more about the city that I literally got an award for bragging about is falling apart in front of us, and I wanted to fix it.
Thank you. Were you going to run again for anything?
You know, someday I may. I mean, you guys know me well enough. I have two little kids and a beautiful wife, and I spend – when I get home after driving back from Columbus, it's like non-political time. It's just awesome time. TV's off, having fun.
All in with the family.
All weekend too. So – I would only do it when the timing worked for that, if I did it at all. But I love being a dad. And
somewhere you find time to write books, if I'm not mistaken.
So I've learned. So people ask me all the time, how are you writing these books when you're doing this show?
Political thrillers.
You know, I stopped watching TV at night. And no one wants my free advice, but it's amazing how much more you get done.
Yep.
If you're not watching things that you already know, like cable news hour after hour. So once the kids are in bed or early in the morning, I'll write a chapter. If I'm on the road late at night and someone's driving me, I'll write a chapter.
What made you start doing that?
The books? Mm-hmm. So the books actually started, believe it or not, after I ran for state auditor. I ran in 2010, back when I started. Democrats were literally at like 70% in the polls because Obama had just won. And that's about the time that Ted Strickland asked me to run for state auditor. And I was obsessed with ending gerrymandering. If you know much about me,
you do love
this
that
is
subject.
Bigger than party.
Yes.
This is bigger than party. I think the rest of the world has caught up with you. Yeah, they have.
Because you harp, I can remember you harping on this and like not really having an understanding of it. It just was not something that was in like the national consciousness. I learned about it from you.
Right.
And, but now I think everyone has caught up just in how important this is.
Well, so I ran for the position that if I had won and Strickland had won, we could have ended gerrymandering. And I spent a year campaigning around the state, and even Democrats would look at me like, what are you talking about? That's, you know, what is that even about? There was no interest. And so, and then after we lost, and, you know, the history, the 2010 gerrymander across this country was the most extreme we've ever seen, worse than even what we thought would happen, worse than the 90s. So Ohio's map is the worst in its history. And so, believe it or not, part of the reason I wrote that first book, having never written any fiction in my life,
The People's House.
Yeah, The People's House.
Starring and that, the name a Youngstown is irony. Vindicator.
Yeah, the reporter. Starring of Youngstown Vindicator reporter. The book was basically the worst marketing idea ever for a thriller, which was, I'm going to write a novel about gerrymandering. and it's about basically many of the ways that gerrymandering causes a real dysfunction and really poisons our system. Now, I learned quickly, like, okay, David, that's not a very good book idea. So I dressed it in all sorts of thrilling, you know, hopefully thrilling, a thrilling plot. But the heart of it was, you know,
voter machine fraud.
Yeah, I got like, into other things you too. You know, like, dark. My books basically are about deep problems in politics that go beyond party. But that first book was literally an effort to say, if people aren't going to see gerrymandering through the news and everything, maybe write a book that makes them think about it. And here's what's really been great. As we know, the first book ended up – so folks who haven't read the book, the bad guy is a Russian oligarch who basically sees gerrymandering, decides that makes it very easy to rig American elections. And I wrote it before, obviously, what really happened in 16 happened.
Yes. Foreshadowed 2016. Yeah.
So, but
your
it was all about
book does this too, those foreshadowing.
Right, but he observed that gerrymandering meant, hey, just go play in the 20 swing counties in the country, and you can flip Congress. The targets are very clear, and that's what he does. That book. What's interesting though is that book has gotten a lot of attention.
Bill Clinton?
Yeah, Bill Clinton read it. I happened to be on Judy Woodruff called about it. It's gotten. I was on PBS. But what's
New
been
York Times? They wrote about it.
Yep. But what's been awesome is my whole goal was to have a conversation about these issues beyond party. My main character is a moderate Republican. I did that for a reason. I didn't want people to think, oh, this is just some Democrat going on about Democratic things. I do that in my day job. I don't need to do it in my book writing. And so what's been really interesting is I speak at book clubs pretty often. And I have been at book clubs on the west side of Hamilton County. Everyone in that room is a Republican. If I had walked into that meeting with my Democratic chair hat on and they had walked in with their party ID on, we would have probably ended the meeting 5 minutes. We've had three-hour conversations about the problems in politics because they like the book. It's not in their face about the problems. And by the time we're done, we're all agreeing that gerrymandering is a terrible problem, that dark money in politics, which my second book gets into, is a terrible problem. I get into veterans' issues in the second book too. So what's been really awesome is this goal of trying to have some level of conversation beyond people with their partisan hats on. That was always the goal of the book. In these book clubs, they're the most sort of fulfilling conversations because I'm able to have these you know, discussions with people of all views. Some voted for Trump, some didn't, but it's not hostile. It's actually, and it, to me, people have asked me, what have you learned from your books? One of many things is that you can actually have those conversations if you walk into the room with the right mindset. And when I walk in as an author and they walk in as a reader, somehow that disarms the conversation. And we start off that book club by talking about Jack Sharp, the main character, and the plot. But within 30 minutes, we're all about politics and gerrymandering and other problems and how do we do better. And it's really been a fascinating. These book clubs are among the most fun things I do because it's a way to get into a non-political space with people who are clearly engaged, you know, in a book club, which is one of the great current institutions where people still come together. But the conversations have just been really positive. If you went to them, you'd actually think of it almost as like a focus group of people who are engaged, but somehow the book allows us to have a conversation that in most other contexts we would never have.
So you self-published the first two, but now...
Yeah, so I self-published which was very important, by the way, because self-publishing means you press send. I use a company out of Columbus that actually does a very good job. And if anyone's written something, feel free to communicate with me. This company did a great job of taking my book and turning it into a very professional book that you can buy on Amazon. It's in bookstores. And it was very low cost, but it meant I could finish the book, and a month later it was available on Amazon. And thank goodness I did that, because I finished the book in the middle of 16, like May. If I had gone through a major publisher, the book would not have come out till 17, after half of my plot came true. And so people would not have known I wrote it before. So using this company really helped. But the good news is, after the first two books did so well, Penguin bought my third book.
Large publisher in New York.
And we have finalized the, I just went through the galleys. I'm looking forward to getting the cover, and it'll be out next May or so. And I'm very excited. I think you do learn a lot about writing as you go. I think it will be the best book. I think it's the best written book. I've learned a lot as I went. And it also, though, just like the others, I don't want to get into the details, but it will be very relevant to things that are at stake in the 20 election beyond just the Donald Trump presidency.
Don't forget, Jason and I can help you with reporter questions if you need to know things about your main character.
Well, then I'll defer to Sherry on all that. She's the absolute best reporter in Cincinnati.
I'm blushing. That's a podcast. You can't tell.
My biggest question, and maybe the toughest question, and then I'm done asking questions, and Sherry, all this praise for your books. What have your mom and dad, John and Francie Pepper, said about your books?
So the only thing, this is going to answer your question. What's it called when you write the
blurb?
The dedication of your book?
Okay.
Mine is to mom and dad, my first and most loyal readers. So when I first wrote the first book, I would send them every chapter, and I would always ask one question. Would you keep reading? And they'd always answer yes with an exclamation point. And so not only have they liked... Now, of course, if your parents don't like your book, you're in trouble. So I had to make them better than what their threshold was. But the truth is, my parents have read every word from the very beginning. And if they... And by the way, I could write a book on this. Do you know how many rejection letters I got from agents for my books?
Like, that's par for the course of being an author.
I mean, so many. Things that were so, I mean, my book club, the first thing I do is I read one of them because it is so crushing. And I actually, you know, and the first book did well. In the end, it's gotten reviewed well, blah, blah, blah. But the agents just crushed it. And if it weren't for my parents in the background saying, we love it, we love it, keep writing.
Good parents.
I probably wouldn't have done it. And I do think anyone entering writing, and hopefully some of the people listening, if you've got a book in your mind, go write it. And don't, my lesson learned is, every critique you get, forget the pain of the rejection. Figure out what they're really saying is the problem and make the change. So listen to it, but don't let it stop you. And I look at my parents who never stopped saying, this is good. Now, they said this is good before I knew to add dialogue. Okay, they said this is good when I like had more problems with it in hindsight that I now understand. But what they liked, they always liked the heart of the main character and who he was. He's a reporter at a mid-sized paper, the Youngstown Vindicator, because, and I wrote this again before all this fake news stuff, those mid-sized papers in particular, and you guys are a little larger, but they're more on the verge of problems. And if they're gone, there goes democracy and there goes some key protections of democracy in that community. I'm glad that the Warren Tribune stepped in and is trying to take over for the Vindicator.
The Vindicator is closing.
But the whole reason I picked Jack Sharp was because as I go around the state, whether it's the paper in Delaware, Ohio, or Youngstown, or the Blade, or the Mansfield paper, these small papers are critical. And so I'm proud I picked him, and my parents like that. And the plot, I think, always had something to it that was interesting. But my parents, the reason my dedication in my third book is to them is because they literally were my first and most loyal readers. And these wouldn't exist if... my dad's the one who's like, why aren't they better known? Why isn't there a movie? Uh-huh. Like, because he's really into these books too. But no, they've been amazing. Everyone should have readers like my parents have been.
It's awesome.
Yeah, they've really been supportive.
That's awesome. Yeah. David, this has been great. Always enjoy talking politics and books and Cincinnati. I love the Cincinnati Award. I didn't know you really well, and I didn't know about the tourism award. Funny. So thanks for sharing all this. Hope to have you back sometime soon, but get back to 2020 mode.
All right. Thanks guys. Good. Thanks, great guys. Catching up. Take care.
Thanks again to David Pepper for coming in. Love talking politics with David Pepper. Love talking politics with Jane Timken and Al Shontifilu and Gwen McFarland, people who have these unique perspectives because they see all the data. They see all the behind the scenes workings. They know who's donating money and who's not. And so all these kind of behind the scenes things that are going on, they know it all. And so we've had Gwen McFarland on, the Hamilton County Democratic Party chairwoman. We've had Alex Shontifilu on, GOP chairman of the county. Hope to get Jane Timken on our show or on the episode on an episode as well. And David Pepper, great. I love Sherry what he said about. I want to expand on this a little bit before we jump out of the episode. What he said about local journalism, and I could not agree with him more. I feel like the backbone of journalism in America, and therefore really upholding the First Amendment, the principles of the First Amendment, really is the small to medium-sized paper. And I would really the non-national media, the Cincinnati Inquirers, the Columbus Dispatches, the Gallupolis Daily Tribunes, the Mansfield Journals of the world are so critical to our democracy. And, you know, it's unfortunate that we just lost the Youngstown Vindicator, which closed. You wrote a nice piece as a Youngstown native about that last week.
Our forefathers understood this.
Yep.
I mean, the First Amendment is part of everything for a reason. They understand that everything works together. And you can't lose this, you know, independent news as part of our lives. And it's very scary at the shrinking and how it's shrinking. And my hometown newspaper did close over the weekend.
So, and because we're local journalism, we're the ones covering your commissioners and your city councils and you know, your local auditors and the folks who are really making decisions that you're electing, that are making decisions
on with your money,
more of your money, really, than what the federal government is making on a day-to-day basis. The stuff that really impacts you, the things that you can, you know, the tangible things of, you know, are your streets safe? Is your trash getting picked up? What are your water rates? These are all decisions made at the local level. So local journalism, watching our officials, Republicans, Democrats, independents, it's so critical to our democracy. And I think I didn't even plan it this way, but I think that's a great segue into, if you don't, I know I keep harping on it, but I want to continue to harp on it because it is, again, the backbone of our democracy. And that's, you know, consider a subscription to Cincinnati.com, all access digital subscription. I believe our deal right now is the first month for free. And then I didn't even look at it before we came in, but it's
significant. There's a significant discount right now because of Labor Day, because that's
we have a Labor Day deal.
You have sales.
Yeah. And so we're always running different sales. And you may have noticed on our website that we're putting some content behind what's called a subscribers only content. And I will say it's been awesome to see how people have responded to that. A lot of my columns are behind there. A lot of Sherry's bigger stories where she's digging in and doing public documents. Scott Wortman, the same thing. So our political team, the response that you guys and just the community has given us on this content has been awesome. So if you haven't gotten a subscription yet, please consider one. Sherry, let's jump to real quickly to our
So Cincinnati
moment of the week.
I don't think this is a hard one. See last week's episode. Definitely the fireworks. I'll tell you what, I think the Rossies have a direct line to Mother Nature. It was going to rain and be severe weather, and I don't think that was a shock seeing what's happening with the hurricane. A lot of times we see those residual effects. We had a blip of rain, but it was a lovely night outside to get ready and watch those fireworks.
And you could hear them all over greater Cincinnati. Phil heard them all the way out in Mount Washington.
Great tradition.
That great tradition we talked about last week, 43 years of this. And
we're all one. It's a city. It is a time when the city is all one for something positive, and it feels good.
It does. It does feel good. So many people just, I know it's overused, but just a melting pot of so many people from all around the region coming together on this one night at the end of summer to celebrate the end of summer and send us into the wonderful season of fall, and which is my absolute favorite college football season.
Did your team win?
My team won. The Marshall Thundering Herd won. Went to the game in Huntington, West Virginia on Saturday.
He's wearing a hat.
Took my kid to his second ever game, six-year-old. But we'll talk a lot more about all that stuff later. Until next time, for my co-host Sharon Coolidge.
By next week, we're going to know where that debate's going to be.
Yeah. For our executive producer, Phil Didion, who gives the hang loose sign.
Love you, Phil.
You're the best. We will catch you next week.